Hello, and welcome to the inaugural podcast of the International Society for Biomedical Research on Alcoholism, or ISBRA, Communication Committee. Today, we will discuss recent findings on the impact of alcohol misuse in older populations with Dr. Dan Blaylock. My name is Victor. I'm a third-year graduate student in the Department of Clinical and Health Psychology at the University of Florida, working with Dr. Jeff Boisenow. This podcast has been a goal of the Communications Committee and current ISBRA President, Dr. Rosanna Camerini, for some time now, so we are thrilled to be coming to you today with this first episode. The podcast will be connected to the ISBRA Communication Committee Bulletin, which is published bi-monthly. The bulletin is delivered directly to the inbox of each ISBRA member and also published on the Communications Committee website, which you can find at www.isbra.com/communications. We are also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and ResearchGate. Each episode of the Bulletin highlights alcohol research news, available jobs, international funding opportunities, an interview with an expert in the field, and a column on publications you may have missed. One such publication spotlighted in our last issue of the Bulletin, Volume 3, Issue 4, has important implications regarding the complex associations between alcohol misuse and hospitalizations in older populations. We are lucky enough to have the author of this paper as today's guest. Dr. Blaylock is a clinical research psychologist at the Durham VA Healthcare System in North Carolina and Duke University Department of Psychiatric and Behavioral Sciences. Hi, Dan.
Hi, glad to be here.
It's so nice to have you in with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. The sun's shining where I am. So it's a good day.
Looking out the window. It looks like the sun's shining down here as well. So we're good to go. So Dan, as of April this year, 2021, you published a paper in Alcohol Clinical and Experimental Research, or ACER, on the association of alcohol use with certain hospitalizations or deaths in older high-risk veterans. And today I just wanted to talk with you about the paper, break it down, see what led you to doing this science, what the process of making this study was, and what we found as part of your research.
Sounds good.
So if we want to start just with the background stuff, what brought you to run this study?
So alcohol use and or misuse, depending on your definition, is something I've been interested in for a while. And it's can be classified as a substance use disorder. But my work in the VA and health services research has me thinking of it a lot more as just a health behavior like any other that can be, like any other health behavior, can have some problems associated with it at certain times. And sometimes people can benefit from changing it to some extent. And I think something that we've seen over the last several years with some data and surveillance papers published is that the rates of alcohol use, misuse, and problems associated with it have been increasing pretty dramatically in older adults. And so that became a focus of some of my work and particularly this paper here.
For how long has the rate been increasing in older adults?
I don't know how long it's been increasing exactly, but some of the work that I've seen is that looking at decade over decade, it's become multiple. Each of those issues, which are separate issues, just, incidents of alcohol use, what we might consider drinking above recommended guidelines, and those are usually CDC guidelines, and then other problems associated with alcohol use and misuse that could lead to alcohol use disorder have grown multiple times in the older adult population. And that's a population that we usually don't focus on in alcohol our research, mostly because that it is the incidence of those things is still considerably less than some of the younger populations. But also older adults have a lot of other problems going on sometimes that might take precedence.
Right. Absolutely. So you are interested in what goes into the impact of this increased alcohol use in these older adults. So when you were putting together this study, what were you trying to get at? What were your hypotheses?
Yeah, our hypotheses were really twofold. One was around the outcome of just general all-cause hospitalization and death, and the other was around another interest of mine, which is cardiovascular disease or CVD-related hospitalization or death. And our thoughts were basically that there have been a lot of epidemiological studies similar to this one, and most of them compare categories of alcohol use to a middling or a moderate level of alcohol use. So we did the same and thought that that's harmful alcohol use, so much higher levels, would lead to, or be associated with, I should say, increased risk for hospitalization or death, as opposed to moderate levels of alcohol use, both in terms of all-cause hospitalization or death and cardiovascular disease hospitalization or death.
When you say all-cause hospitalization or death, because I know that's a sort of a particular language for it, is that just any reason that these folks might get hospitalized or pass away?
Yes, and we might just call that hospitalization or death most of the time. But since we're also defining separately a really specific cause, that's why
cardiovascular disease, right?
Exactly. That's why I've included all cause.
Okay.
I should also maybe clarify, since I'm stringing together a lot of words, that we're saying hospitalization or death, which is kind of an interesting just set of words right there. And I think it's worth clarifying that this is the outcome could be a hospitalization or a death, not hospitalization and then death. So one or the other.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So you're looking, and the hypothesis, it sounds like, was people who drink more specifically into these hazardous or harmful levels of drinking, that they are more likely to be hospitalized or die within the window of time that you were looking at.
Right. That was our hypothesis. Yeah.
Okay. How does the cardiovascular disease come in?
It comes in a couple of ways. One is that it is just kind of within the US and worldwide, the number one cause of death. And so that was kind of an easy culprit to look at. But two is that there's a lot of interesting research on alcohol use and cardiovascular disease that shows a couple of different effects. But there's a lot of popularized work on the potential protective effects of alcohol use on cardiovascular health and lower incidence of cardiovascular disease. So we wanted to look at that in particular, and it does seem to vary the effects by level of alcohol use. But also it is an issue. It's just the most prevalent single issue affecting hospitalization or death for people in general, not necessarily in this population, as I'm sure I'll mention here in a few minutes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it makes sense why you would also look at CVD, the cardiovascular disease here. So when you gathered the hypotheses and you put everything together, how did you go about the study? How did you collect your data?
Yeah, so this was a huge team effort. And I could say I'm actually was fortunate to be brought on to this team. It was led by Matt Machiefsky at the Durham VA and Duke Department of Population Health Sciences, and Donna Zulman, who is a primary care MD and health services researcher out in California at the Palo Alto VA and at Stanford. And they put together this project actually before I even came on board to collect this data. And it was with the VA's Office of Research and Development and their Office of Primary Care, really interested in looking at high-risk veterans in particular. And that's really defined. There's a really specific definition, but it's basically veterans that through their a series of demographic and clinical features and comorbidities are at pretty high risk for hospitalization or death within the next 1 year. And so that's kind of our definition of high risk. And they happen to be older adults. So they went about getting this project funded and to survey a nationally representative sample of these high-risk veterans. So the sample itself actually does come from very evenly distributed, a nationally representative sample of 10,000 veterans who get VA services of some kind, which is far from every veteran, but veterans that do get VA services. And this, once I came on board, I thought that this was a really good sample to leverage for this specific question. And so we went about getting a little bit of additional pilot funding to fund some of the team and get some of the work. But the data itself was already collected through through the VA's electronic health records.
Fantastic. How did you get the pilot funding? What was that through?
That was through our local, and by local, I mean Durham, North Carolina, our Health Services Research and Development Department, ADAPT. They have a nice pilot funding program to help more junior investigators like myself to be able to get some additional funds to help pay some statisticians and some research coordinators to help us conduct some of our research before maybe we're able to be competitive for larger grants. So very fortunate to have gotten that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm glad they were able to help you put this study together.
Yeah.
I'm on the edge of my seat, Dan. What did you find?
it's exciting stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. So I think we found several things that I think are worth discussing. Some are findings and some are non-findings. So what we found was that the our moderate use group of alcohol, which is our reference group, in comparison to them, our harmful drinking group that was drinking at the highest levels had significantly greater odds of hospitalization or death 6 months after our index date. Interestingly, the hazardous alcohol use group, which is in that middle group, kind of between moderate and harmful, did not have any significantly different levels of risk of hospitalization or death 6 months out. And then potentially most interestingly, the lowest level, so the complete abstinent group, had elevated risk of hospitalization or death 6 months 6 months after our index date compared with the moderate drinking group for all cause hospitalization or death.
Okay, so was there a difference between the moderate and let me get this straight. So the different groups for alcohol consumption were none at all, mm-hmm. moderate consumption, hazardous mm-hmm. consumption, and harmful consumption.
Yes.
Okay. Both the harmful and the no consumption groups had a higher risk of hospitalization or death in this window?
Yes.
That's interesting.
So yeah, it is interesting. Although if you know the literature, it might be pretty unsurprising to you. This is replicating what's often referred to as the J-shaped curve for alcohol and mortality. Or sometimes the U-shaped curve. In this case, it is a J-shaped curve because the risk of hospitalization or death is definitely greatest at the harmful use level, which is the highest amount of alcohol use. And it does tick back up a little bit at the bottom with the abstinent group as well, but not as much as the harmful group. I think the odds ratio is over 1.5 for the harmful risk group, but it's a little less than 1.2 for the abstinent group. So both statistically significantly increased from the moderate use group, mm-hmm. but to different degrees for sure.
Right. And if I understand odds ratios correct, that would be a 50% increase, 1.5, so a 50% increase in that harmful group and a 20% increase for the abstinent group?
Yes.
Okay. What about with the cardiovascular disease? What did you find there?
Yeah, and that's the one that I was particularly interested in looking at. Again, there's been J-shaped curves found there. What we found is what I would say is a non-finding, in that we found no statistically significant differences across all four groups. And I say a non-finding specifically because when you look at the number of observations we had in our outcome of six-month cardiovascular disease-related hospitalization or death, from those 10,000 veterans, we only had 184 total, which was a surprisingly low number. And so when you look at our the confidence intervals around our odds ratios, they're really, really big. So I don't think we can really draw a lot of conclusions from that. We can't say that there's no differences. We can just say that our data really failed to find any differences.
Okay. So just not enough people. In that condition, not enough people with the cardiovascular. Interesting. Okay. So some interesting significant findings and some interesting not significant findings.
Yeah. And then one other additional kind of nerdy methodological finding.
Oh, yeah, please.
We did a sensitivity analysis because this study was conducted in the VA. And VA has operationally some specific thresholds for what they consider a hazardous amount of alcohol use, where some bit of clinical intervention might be warranted and recommended as far as documentation. And that cutoff is a little bit higher than what we see in some of the literature that's published and maybe what some other places might go with. So we examined both cutoffs. Both the VA specific cutoffs for defining that moderate use group versus the hazardous use group, and found no differences across those cutoffs. So no meaningful differences depending on if you're using the VA thresholds or the non-VA thresholds, which I think is kind of interesting and probably good for the VA.
Right. It's a good sign. That's a good sign. Just off the top of your head, Dan, do you know what those cutoffs are or what the cutoff is in the literature?
Yeah. And so this is specific to the instrument we used, which is the AUDIT-C, Alcohol Use Disorders Identification Test Consumption Questions, which is a three-item screener that the VA since 2008 has been mandated that every year that every veteran seen in the VA has to get these questions. A lot of medical centers use that same questionnaire. Some use other questionnaires like the CAGE as alcohol use screeners. But these aren't translated directly to drinks. They're more indicative of drinking consumption amount and patterns, but not the exact same.
Interesting. So I can't just say, I got to keep between a 3 and a 5. On this scale, if hypothetically I was thinking about my own self in this context.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because the three questions take into account not only how much you're drinking on a yearly basis, but also the patterns of drinking. So just like the CDC might have different recommended guidelines as far as how much is healthy to drink per week, they also have how much is healthy to drink in one particular sitting, because there's chronic use of alcohol and then binge drinking or heavy drinking days. So both of those are kind of factored into this single score.
Right. That's fascinating.
So the VA cutoff for this AUDIT-C instrument is 5 across the board, whether you're male or female. And the cutoffs that are established elsewhere suggest a cutoff of 3 for women and 4 for men. So a little bit higher for men and then a decent bit higher for women in the VA in practice.
Are those drinks or is that the score on this test?
That's the score on this test.
Okay. So what does this tell us, Dan? Like what can we take away from this study and what sort of future directions do you have in mind for this work?
Yeah, I think it tells us a few things. The one biggest thing that I would want to underscore is that that this increase in alcohol use that we're seeing in older adults, it is translating to increased risk of hospitalization or death in this population. And specifically in this population of high-risk veterans that we're looking at, there are a lot of competing risks for hospitalization or death. So even with as much as and as complex as these veterans are in terms of other health issues that they might be dealing with, that alcohol use is still one that seems to be predicting mortality and hospitalization above and beyond some of these other issues. So not to overlook that in older adults, even if they have other issues going on. A second takeaway I would say related to the cardiovascular disease related questions is that it's really important to when some of this literature comes out to really take a look at the data and see, you know, are the questions being asked, do they really have a good chance of sufficiently answering those questions? In this case, with our paper with cardiovascular disease, the answer is no, that these non-findings aren't really a confident finding of no difference. So to be very investigative as far as the methods used for some of these studies. I would say a third takeaway from this is again that this group of abstinent individuals that's captured in a lot of these epidemiological studies is another group to really investigate before you run too far with the results of any of these papers. It's a heterogeneous group, and we can't always capture that heterogeneity very well. And oftentimes, a lot of people with a lot of different reasons for being abstinent get lumped into a group that's just labeled as abstinent. They don't drink right now. So it's difficult to take into account that heterogeneity in terms of some things like the sick quitters hypothesis, the idea that patients who are really sick or really likely to experience poor health outcomes have been forced to abstain from alcohol for various reasons. And so they're getting lumped in with people who are lifetime abstinent.
I see. So we got to be careful, it sounds like, not to draw cause and effect from this, that this is a pattern that we're finding, but there's a lot of other variables going into why, for example, the folks who are in the no drinking group might have that increased risk. They might have other conditions or other past histories that could have caused them to be in that group in particular that would artificially increase their risk in this particular study structure.
Right.
Is that right? Okay. Interesting. So what's next?
For the group that this study was conducted out of, we were able to take this great data that we have on this nationally representative sample of high-risk veterans and get an externally funded grant together to look a little bit more in depth at this group and compare them to a more general representative population of veterans. And that's specific to looking at social determinants of health, which is becoming a greater and greater piece of emphasis for healthcare systems to define what aspects of a person or a person's social or personal situation is impacting their health. So that's one direction that this work is taking. With regard to alcohol, I just started my career development award in the VA, looking at working towards a joint intervention to reduce alcohol misuse and mitigate cardiovascular disease risk in veterans who are at somewhat elevated risk in both categories. So that's something that I've just started, but hopefully looking to really leverage some of this work to help alcohol use and alcohol use interventions be something that a broader group of people can have access to and take away some of the stigma around getting treatment for it, as it's just another health behavior that some people can be healthier if they do different things with their drinking behaviors, as opposed to thinking of it as a mental illness or an addiction necessarily, or as another particular disorder like that. It's a heterogeneous group of people, and different people are going to benefit from different degrees of treatment. And I think we can increase access to treatment as a whole by really looking at the health effects of alcohol.
I think that's fantastic. Congratulations on your career development award. Good luck on your mission.
Thank you.
It was really nice to talk with you. Dr. Dan Blaylock, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much. It's glad to be here.
For everyone else listening, we will be back in 2 months with our next episode, when we will again host an author of one of the publications spotlighted in our newest issue of the Bulletin. Until then, please find the ISBRA Communications Committee on the web at www.isbra.com/communications. That's ISBRA, ISBRA. Or you can find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and ResearchGate. Best wishes to you and to all your research collaborators.